Everyone is here except Dan Dever. He called in and said he wouldn't be here tonight. Our workshops are informal, and they're just for discussion about issues that will come up on the agendas in the future. And so for all of you that are out there, it's not going to be as formal as our meetings are. First thing I would like to do is the volunteer recognitions. I would like to call Will Coates. Would you come up, please?
Will has been a volunteer with the police department for over 6 years. During that time, Will has done fingerprinting, crime mapping, record filing, customer service, front counter, and vehicle shuttles to and from Moses Lake. Will is always pleasant, quick with a smile, and very helpful. Because of his dedication and can-do attitude, Will has become a respected member of the police department to provide valuable services to the police department and the citizens of Othello. So, with that, I present you with a certificate of appreciation and a key to the city. And I'm going to address the Planning Commission, and I'd like you to come back up for a picture. Would Rex Robbins, Bob Russell, Claire Lackey, Larry McCordy, and any of you please come up? I would like to recognize this group. They're members of the Othello Planning Commission and what they do. The purpose of the Planning Commission is to serve in an advisory capacity to the City Council. The Planning Commission prepares the comprehensive plan for the city, which identifies the orderly and coordinated development of land and building uses, reviews all plats, identifies open space and parks, adopts the official city map, identifies city zones. These are no small tasks that the Planning Commission spends weeks and months on these issues, with the guiding philosophy of what will Othello look like in 20 to 30 years from now. And we want to thank you for the endless hours and countless hours that you put in. And you guys kind of fly underneath the radar here, and this tonight is to recognize you for everything you do. So with that, Claire Lackey, certificate of appreciation and key to the city.
I don't have no key to the city.
In trouble.
Will, you want to come back up for a...
Next item on our agenda is traffic flow on Pine and Cedar Streets. Dan O'Neill, I don't see him here yet, so if he shows up, we will come back to that item. Item number three, DOT public meeting regarding Highway 24 overpass project.
It's our first night with our new system, so we've been practicing all day.
I miss practice.
Let's see if Stan's here.
This is, for all of you, as well as council members, this is all new. Usually we have one projecting onto one wall. Now we kind of go both directions, so it's more convenient for those of you who are out there and up here.
The test is on, Stan.
No pressure.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Jay, do you want to hit the lights?
Those have to stay on.
They have to stay on?
Yeah.
Those lights? Oh, okay.
These lights are the same power as this.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Well, thank you for having me come down tonight and explain the safety project that we're about ready to undertake here. It's going to be coming February 22nd, the first day of the project. Anyway, I'm a project engineer for the DOT. City fellow went out and had a grant for safety improvements for the SR 2426 intersection. And
There we go.
There. Okay. Here's the meat of the project, right? Anyway, I'm Bob Romine, DOT project engineer. We're in partnerships with a fellow, it's a new fellow, spin around.
He refused a podium.
Anyway, what we have is a safety project coming up, starting February 22nd. What we're going to be doing, now, a little history here, I'm jumbling around while I get my thoughts all lined up, but essentially what's going on is this intersection right here, 24 and 26, is a high accident location, and we're about ready to embark on the first phase of the improving the safety at this intersection. That's stage one. That starts February 22nd. Where we're at is right here off the spur and 600 feet from about here to the north on Broadway right about here. Stage one of this project is to try to get the heavy, slow trucks, from going across. We have a lot of accidents, T-bone accidents at this intersection related to slow trucks crossing and people not paying attention and to get your accident. So what we're going to do here under stage one is come in and lower the grade on Highway 24 Broadway underneath this bridge. It's going to be a tricky little job. A lot of stuff involved, groundwater, trucks. So we're, you know, through public involvement, we're coming in here February 22nd when we don't have all the trucks going through the area, the high number of trucks. And then it's a 30-day job, 35 working days. And then in this contract, we're going to have a 14-day closure because it's simply a very difficult piece, even though we're regrading, is to get traffic through here when we're doing it. We've got a lot of utilities we're going to lower, a lot of work going on. We're digging down, and there's some unknowns. We think we got it dialed in, but groundwater is a big concern on this job, trying to lower the grade, trying to get, you know, this reprofile this road underneath the high, under the bridge. We need those 14-day closures to make it happen as quickly as possible. Get in and get out is the motto we got on this job. So 14 days, once the contractor says we're ready to go and shut the road down, they're going to go in and rip and tear this thing out. Utilities, new road, you name it, we're going after it. And they got 14 days to get a bulk of that stuff done. So it's going to be very aggressive. There's we're going to be pushing the contractor, working with them to get that schedule and keep them on it. That's stage one of the safety improvements, to get the trucks out of this intersection and routing them through. Routing them up and around and down, and I'll show you that in a minute.
Stuff in white, the stuff in red is stage one, the stuff in white, I'm going to touch real briefly on stage two, is what we're trying to get to with moving the trucks over.
And stage two.
Stage one is the only contract that's left.
Right. We have a contractor on the board, it's been executed. And we're starting to get their paperwork in and their schedule in. Bear with me here. And what we're trying to get to. Trying to get up to Willoughby Street there. What we're trying to get to is to direct some traffic away from the intersection with the heavy trucks, going up, slow looping down and creating a loop around, if you will, of the city street infrastructure. What that's going to require is some radius improvements on these corners and also some channelization. But I wanted to point out that with this work, the overall thing is the change in the circulatory pattern of the traffic coming around. Big trucks will come up through here and down and back down. Before I scroll back down to the bottom screen, does anybody have any questions about this piece right here?
Are you changing the radiuses too?
I think we got them right now. I think we're showing at 50s. And I think the last thing I was here, you mentioned something about 75. This is an outdated thing. I'll look at it. So yeah, I forgot. We'll be looking at that. This requires some right away acquisitions to improve the radiuses. So. Thomas's question is, what side radius is are we using at this intersection? Apparently, it looks like Shaw is 50, which is a design standard for a smaller truck, but when you get the bigger trucks coming through here, there is a concern about off-tracking and not making this corner appropriately and approaching into this end up here. So what we're looking at, we'll be looking at a little broader radius as we're bigger. I think the next standard up is like 75. We'll be looking at that. So we have to improve this to improve the turning radius for the trucks.
So if we scroll back down to the highway, there it is. What all this is going to do, I probably should get that a little.
Yeah, raise it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What we're trying to accomplish is lower the grade, get trucks to go up and around and down. The next stage, stage two, this is where we're going to recognize the safety improvements. Right here, excuse me. What we have proposed channelization, left turn. So eastbound traffic still has a left turn movement. No cross traffic. All traffic wants to get up to from 24 down here to the town instead of taking the spur up, it'll go straight. And that relieves a lot of the pressure off this intersection right here. So the movement here, but as you notice, this, we have some raised channel, raised islands right here to restrict the movement. This will come down and be a right. Only take a right going that way. So if you want to go east, you have to come down and around and come out this way. It's going to be a little re-education on people's driving habits, but it's going to be a safer intersection. Likewise, on the southeast, as you see, there's a right in, no cross traffic, left, right out. And the left turn, we still have the right here, but right here is going to be a little bit more restrictive. I know we have businesses here. We're getting into that public involvement phase, but this is stage two, so we still have some discussion with the local businesses and whatnot. So we're really looking at that. Along with this improvement, we're also looking at some possible access rights and restricted movements to minimize any of the conflicts here. When you have traffic coming up this way, people shoot across over here, people coming down. So you know, we'll be looking at that. What does that mean? What does that mean to the businesses? But really, real important that we try to control as much of the movement as possible to make it as safe as possible. Granted, we listen to the businesses and understand what their needs are, see if there's anything possible that you can do. I want to talk about this left turn lane real briefly. This was a concession that we made through a public involvement. Initially, the thought was to close this all the way off. That created quite a public outpour. So we're going to take a step back. We're going to provide this left turn lane, but we'll be watching it. Monitor the traffic accidents to see if this is working okay and smooth as we normally do. If it doesn't, then we'll be coming back. When? Can't predict that, I don't know. We'll watch the traffic accidents. We might have a through one here, we might not have an accident. So we basically look at 2-year averages running every 2 years, see what the accident trend is. If nothing shows up, then we don't touch it. If there's some accidents that start cropping up, we start looking, then we'll be back talking. But right now, this is what you guys will have. Side left turns are important to the community, so it's there right now.
Talk about signage.
Signage is coming. One thing that we can do, there'll be some directional signs with all this work as well, directing people how to get there. We know there'll be an education process before we have using the infrastructure here. We will have signs, you know, we have those vendor signs, if you will. You only see Burger King and McDonald's. Those can be available, but there is a really key to have those out on the highway. They're not free, but you know, it's one way to get the word out. Okay, we're still here. Follow the sex if you fix our business. I know there's a lot of past rallies that wants to speak at one time 4 years ago. This is one of my stopping points coming in here. So try to maintain that as much as we can. Does anybody have any questions about this?
What kind of timelines are you looking at for the stage two? Are we realistically?
We have the design money to start the design work because there's right-of-way acquisition. That always takes time to get that. So design and right-of-way acquisition, I believe we have the funding in place right now to get that. The construction dollars are a little light. When we finish stage one, I'll know what the final bill is on stage one. Then we'll go after the additional funds that we need for stage two. But we will be starting the design phase here shortly, probably sometime this spring, to get the right-of-way piece moving. One thing that we're not doing, I'm a step back, there's this little radius here, and I know there's this is far enough from the dealership right here. We're not improving this radius under stage one. It'll happen under stage two. This will also provide the turning movement that we need for the trucks. But because of the right-of-way acquisition, we just couldn't get there on this job to get this thing built this year. So we had to delay that out to stage two. So
funding for phase one.
Funding for phase one is all secured lot.
Yeah, can you go through how that was
Paul warned me about the money question. I'm a little weak on that. I apologize for that. But essentially, there was some local program money speaking that the city went after and got it. And they asked us to come in and administer the contract, design up and administer the contract. So I don't really, as far as that, I couldn't know. The city went after the money, they got it, and we're doing it. So that's the project right there. Key things, February 22nd. 14-day closure. There'll be ample notification to the public, and when that that 14-day road closure will occur, it's not going to just show up one day and it's closed. We'll let everybody know through the media and whatnot.
14 calendar days, 14
days. It's going to be calendar. That encourages the contractor that once they shut it down, if they need to get it done, work on the weekends, they will.
Right. So February 22nd is start date.
Yes.
Closure.
No, not necessarily. They may have a couple days prior to that.
Okay.
But that's when you'll start seeing the contractor out there serving these stuff.
And we're going to have a paved right away. They've got a commitment from a paving contractor.
They'll have to. I mean, it's an early paver. So somebody will have to fire up a plant pretty early to make this happen.
And they're committed to that.
Yeah. I believe CWA out of Moses Lake will be the sub for the paving. So they know they got to fire up early.
Okay.
And there's another
contract.
Well, that is. Usually don't see plants up until mid-April, but for this case, they'll have to fire it up early. And there's another passing lane just a few miles to the west that's going to go out and with a March 1st start date, so there'll be other asphalt that can fire up on that one as well. So that's our project in general. There is another piece I wanted to show you. Along with that 14-day closure, we have a detour route. I wanted to kind of briefly just go over that and try to answer questions if I could. Can. Here's our little detour route. Now I got to rotate this.
Well, did you say they're working at night on phase one?
It's up to the contractor. If they're still falling behind, they will be. I believe we have a penalty and a bonus if they get it open earlier. Generally, we throw that in the contracts to encourage them that they know they'll get dinged if they don't finish it up in time, those 14 days. And they get rewarded.
I thought the contractors asked to bid it to work at night.
They want to know if they have that option, and we cleared that. So
okay.
In case things slow down, they'll be out there at night, which is a good thing. I mean, oh, come on.
Tricky. I guess I got a question for Jay. Well, Luke, what type of shape is that street in? Will it handle the semis and all that, or do we need to go in there and do some work this year on it?
When the radius gets done, that work can be completed, but right now it's going to work as is until phase two comes through.
So the street is in good shape, or?
I'd have to go out and look at it as far as the trucks are concerned.
It's probably going to need. It's
going to
need. It's going to need updated a little bit to take care of it.
Yeah.
To handle the heavier loads.
Still will be able to go south off the spur.
Real quickly,
Comment. Phase one seems kind of benign as far as all you're doing is getting ready for stage two. As we work into stage two, I think it's extremely important to keep the businesses who are impacted up to speed on a consistent basis and aboard. I think that's real important because this impacts them dramatically. Just like you were saying, your traffic division curb between Bingers and Desert Deli.
Right.
You know, make sure it doesn't go far enough back where it prohibits people from turning in. I guess you've already addressed that with those people.
On First Street?
Yes.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of public outreach, not a lot of input from the first people at First Street so much. There's been quite a bit of trying to get some involvement there. Stage two is where they're really going to be watching. As far as impacts during construction, what's the best way to get the word out at that point? Generally, we hit the media as, you know, local paper.
And I think these workshops and come in and discuss it at these workshops as we work toward that. And having you present to answer questions.
Absolutely. Be happy to do that.
It's going to be. Send direct communications to everybody that's impacted in the area, like we did for tonight.
And I'd be more than happy to come down and talk about the project at any time. So. We recognize there's going to be some impacts, but very seldom do we get out this early in the construction year to do any work at all. But the groundwater and the trucks are driving us to do it this early. You know, it makes a lot of sense. It could be wallowing in mud if we go out a little later in the year, so some concerns about that.
Larry?
My question to you is it that much cheaper to do it at the worst time in the year, February, where the contractor is going to cost him a lot more to do it because of cold weather, firing up an asphalt plant at that time, maybe keeping the snow off? My question, I guess,
Larry, originally we were talking about doing it in October, November, December, and at that time there's a lot of commerce from, you know, the Sun Basin storages out here on Bench Road to McCain Foods, for instance, and we're trying to plan it when everybody's kind of... Go ahead.
Happens along the First Street in the Broadway area.
talk about, you mentioned the radius off of Highway 24, south of the overpass, as a 2011 project?
Correct.
Can you explain why that's not in the 2010 project, the first phase?
That is because to get the money, we had to have a quick turnaround on this project and from local program dollars that are out there for that. And we simply could not have made that improvement on that radius because of the time it takes to go through the right-of-way acquisition process. We simply wouldn't have made that milestone, if you will, and we wouldn't have got the funding, pretty much. So we had to table that, come back at a later time to get it, when we had the time to do it. It was a real crunch period this summer to get this money obligated. So,
I see that as a real improvement to that intersection. That bigger radius.
Yeah, wish I could have got there on this one while we're doing the other work on it, but it just wasn't a possibility. You don't always get to do what you know the right thing is, but we'll get there. We'll get it.
Chief?
Can you tell us, will there be emergency vehicle access through First Extension to the 24, or are you going to have all that cut off?
They did the thing underneath the bridge.
Well, we know you're going under the bridge, and South Broadway and 24 will not be accessible. Right. But will fire and police be able to use First Street Extension, which is the spur road, or are you going to have that blocked off totally as well? That's the spur road right there at the
Take a quick peek at the contractor schedule. They're going after that spur first.
No.
I don't know if that's going to be hit during that 14-day closure or not. Their schedule is a little bit fuzzy on that.
You said it was 600 feet either side of the overpass.
300 feet each side.
300 feet each side. So that would take 600 feet.
TV shop for emergency.
Yeah, yeah,
that was part of it.
Well, it goes south.
Oh, I know what I did. Okay. Rotate. Okay. That's better. You're talking right down here, right?
Yeah.
Right. The contractor schedule I just saw this afternoon, it looks like he's going after this piece. Your question is, can they get here on emergency services?
Right.
Most likely. I think if you give me a contact number, some way to work it out, if there's an emergency and you can get word to my, I can get my project inspector's cell phone out there, you know, to communicate.
But for the most part, you're going to close off all traffic from Highway 26 down.
When we do this piece, yeah, when we tear it up, there's no way for traffic to get through that piece. They may be able to stay some of it, might be rough road, but pretty much once we go after this, because we're having to lower this. Although this is kind of not as deep as, or right here, this is our deepest part of our regrade. Here it starts thinning out a little bit, so there's probably opportunity to get traffic through there, emergency services and whatnot.
I'll get you my card and the fire chief's card.
Key thing though is my PI will be out on the site, the contractor will be. If there's something coming on, we can set up something where you make a call, as long as you give us enough warning to get out of the way, if there's anything we possibly can do.
We don't like to run over time.
Another piece that when we're doing this work, there was a contract requirement for pedestrian access through the area. So if there's any foot traffic, contractor has to provide something. So it's not cut off to the foot traffic. I got to be clear about that.
There is some. It's not a lot, but there is some.
Right. And it's got to be, as far as the requirements, got to be ADA compliant. So if there's any person with some disability, you can still get through the area. I haven't seen a plan from the contractor yet, but they're developing one, I hear. So we'll see what they come up with. But that's the project. It's two phases. It's all to get this intersection safe. More happy to come back and talk project, or if anybody has any questions now, more than happy to listen to you.
Council, have any questions they'd like to ask, or anybody in the audience?
Well, I just want to make sure we follow up on Mr. Wilson's comment about the structural integrity of the road that's going to handle all that truck traffic.
You mean mean on
Mama Luke?
Mama up here.
Did you have done any coring?
No.
So that's different something if you look at.
Mama Luke would, any work that needs to be done on Mama Luke can be done during stage two.
Right.
They're not gonna actually redirect traffic until stage two.
Right, and I don't think that any of that kind of work got scoped into the estimate, so there might be a little bit of a rub on that one. Yeah, yeah. That's definitely something, I didn't see it in the scope of that phase two at all, no rebuilding scope.
You're gonna, Jay, you made the comment that you will have to wait until they cut the turning radiuses and then address the Wall Loop situation. Would the same be true down here by Evergreen Implement? Wouldn't it be, I know it's, you couldn't get the funding because of the time frame thing, but you, you're gonna do some work on the approach going up to right in there.
This piece, yeah.
Yeah.
This piece here will get, you know.
You'll have to tie that turning radius into it at a later time.
That will get the structure for trucks, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was scoped in there for rebuild. So we'll have the thickness and the surfacing and everything necessary for trucks.
So there's any way on phase two to get Wall Loop considered for some funding?
Well, we can ask.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't an initial scope for the dollars obligated, so.
But we're turning it into sort of like a highway, and I doubt it's built for that, you know, for that type of traffic, heavy, heavy traffic, so.
Well, way back, a little history on the funding of the local program dollars. To get to the dollars, they said bring it in at $1 million. Mm. That was what the money people told us, so that's what we got. The money that we set up for all this stuff, it's gonna cost us a little over $1 million to do this work. So rebuilding a road, I'm gonna add some money to that. That's a big chunk of cash.
It is currently truck route road.
Oh, it is?
Just to be clear for those that don't know, that I wanna make sure that is the street, Wall Loop is the street that is behind the lumber yard that shares access on one side, on the north side of the lumber yard and on the south side with Pacific Prime Fuel.
Yes.
The same street?
Yes.
Yeah. So that truck, that sees plenty of trucks already because it is a commercial fueling spot.
So you may have your structure out there in the roadway now as we speak. So.
Well, I'm going to tell you it's lumpy as a truck driver.
So and it's holding up pretty well, too. We did look at one road. Just so you know, we did look at everything, and we did look at Columbia, which is the next street south of the loop, but that posed its own problems. And then Columbia here, we looked at trying to do this closer, would make sense, but to do a radius improvement, this building, we'd be chopping out the corner of that building, so that kind of shot that one out of the water right there. Cost just couldn't happen. So you'd almost
have to take that building out, wouldn't you?
Pardon?
You'd almost have to take that building out the way it's built.
So that's what shot us out of the water on that one. But we did try to get to this one first, made more sense, closer to the highway and everything, but that building kind of precluded that idea.
You
so.
Didn't have to stop truckers from parking on that street then, too, because that narrows it down to one lane.
Yeah, I know there's several trucks that do park on Wall Loop, and that'll have to come to an end.
That could be part of our signing plan for that phase. We'd have a lot of signs to put up, so no parking signs would be easy to put up.
Are there any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Item number 4, Centennial Committee update. Ken? Okay.
I just pulled a plug.
It's something there's.
You're going to do the proclamation, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I am.
Right.
Yeah. We have, our centennial is coming up, just as an intro to this. Ken Kaler, Deaver, Ken, you're on this? Several of our city council members and several members of the community that are out there tonight have been very busy putting this together, and Debbie. And so Ken's going to kind of lead off here, and then when he's through, I'm going to do a proclamation. Ken.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm just going to kind of start out here in the middle of things. I don't have a PowerPoint because back 100 years ago, I don't think that existed. So we decided, no, we're not going that route. Paperwork, we throw that out because I don't think that exists. But anyway, on a serious note, first of all, I would like all of the Centennial Committee that are here tonight stand up. I think they need some recognition. I think we've got a pretty good group here. Debbie, Ken, whoever, Eamon, you're on that too. I think this crew needs a big hand. I have I haven't done anything, but I've got a good crew that's taking care of me and holding me up, and I think they've done a great job. I think we've come a long ways. 2010 is supposed to be next year, but we started this in 2008. We started in October, and everybody said, why are you starting so early? And I think maybe we should have started a year before that, because we've still got a lot of things to do. But I think we've come a long ways. Thanks to my committee, we started, like I say, in October and elected some officers. I don't know why they put me in as chair, but they did. Dan Deaver's my co-chair, Debbie's my treasurer, and my wife is my secretary. She has a hard time keeping up with you, but she tries hard. So anyway, that's kind of how we got started. Several things that we do, we have a meeting every month. And then I've got committees that go out and do their work as well, and do their portion of it. They report back to us, and we kind of keep this thing flowing as much as we can. I think the city staff has done a wonderful job to help us. I think they've been real supportive. Thank you, council, and the mayor, for all your support. Otherwise, we couldn't do a lot of this. We've asked for money. And sometimes we got a little flack, but you went ahead and did it for us, and I appreciate that. We asked for $5,000 in for this year's budget, 09, to help us out, to get us started. As of December 2nd, Mike can verify this, I think we spent over $9 of it, right? But I think we've come a long ways in what we've done with it. We've done a lot of advertising, and I think that we've got things going our direction. We come back again, ask council for $7,000 for another little issue. We decided a brick project out here in front of city council. So it's kind of a partnership deal between the city and us going together to do this brick project. I think this was kind of Debbie's brainstorm, but anyway, we all got on the bandwagon and put it together. I'm just going to jump ahead here a little. In case the council hadn't seen these sitting in front of them, I challenge each one of you councilmen and the mayor to buy a brick or more and put them out here in our deal. I am doing that, and so I think that everybody should do this, get on board. I think we've got about, 35 sold now. We're shooting for 100, and I don't think we have any problem with that. That particular project we've got out here, we're going to have a 2-foot square granite piece that will set in that, and it'll have Othello Centennial on it, and it'll also have the elevation of the city of Othello officially, and then everything around that will be a brick layout of each family or business or whatever, and I guess you want to know the price, the smaller ones are, we didn't put a brick up here, Dave. We've got a smaller brick, about a 4x8 brick, and with everything engraved on it, we're selling those for $50. The larger one, which is double that size, we're selling those for $100. So that's kind of what we've got going there, and I think they're doing a pretty good job on those. Like I say, don't forget these, and be sure to put your names on them. We've got a lot of projects going here. I'll give you a quick rundown of where we're at and what we're going to do. January 1, 2010, we're going to raise our flag, our centennial flag. It'll fly out here. And then we're also having another one for each one of our celebrations. Each celebration, event, or festival is related with a theme around our centennial. So that goes for San Diego Crane Festival, 4th of July, even the fair, Homestead, and the whole thing. I mean, anything that has to do with 2010 has got the theme of the centennial. So that's kind of what we're all about. If you're curious, this little painting here, we had Michael Lewis, the art teacher of the high school. He donated this. He spent a lot of time and effort on it. He did that. At a later date, we're going to take that and auction it off. I hope everybody gets together and put some money into that, and we'll put it here in City Hall. But I'm not sure what's going to happen to that picture yet. But we have intentions of auctioning that off, and we're all done. From that, I guess I. We took that picture and we made a poster of it. That was what we did to make that poster. And if you notice this portion of it, we kind of added that to the picture. I didn't want to put it on there, but we did it here. And that's our banner over the corner, which will fly up and down the streets. Those will be put up right after the right after the Christmas decorations go down, those banners will go up. We've had quite a few businesses around town that are buying those banners, and the way we're doing that, we're selling them for $150 a piece. The business can put their name at the bottom of the banner, and they will fly the whole year. And we're going to do it on Main Street, First Street, and Broadway. And then when we get through with them at the end of the year, those banners will go to those businesses. Those will be their banner. After those banners come down, we're going to replace the old banners that we've got, are kind of tattered and torn, that we've got out there now. Those will be replaced with new ones. We will have somewhere around 20, 22 new banners flying on top when we get through. So that's part of our contribution back for what we're doing here. By the way, the logo itself, we spent a lot of time on putting that logo together, and we did take the city's logo and then just changed it to get our centennial on it. And then we framed it with that centennial 100 years. It just kind of made it stick out a little bit better. Another project that we did is our 2010 calendars. These are a one-time deal. We got five businesses that donated the money to do the printing on these. And then we turn around and we're going to sell these for $12 a piece. And that all goes into our centennial fund to put all this on. And they're kind of a unique calendar. They're more than just the dates, but we've got pictures of different things that's happened in Othello in the last 100 years. There's pictures in here of the railroad, pictures of just different items and things that's that's happened in the last 100 years. So they're worthwhile, they're a keepsake. We've got hats that's got Othello Centennial on them. We've got our shirts. That's why I'm wearing this and to advertise a little, but it's the same thing. It's got it all on there. We've got pens and coins. We kind of thought, well, we got to have a 100-year coin. So we put this together and had those made. So those are for sale for $10 a piece. And if you hang on to it for 100 years, I guarantee you that you could trade that in for a brand new in 100 years. And then we've got the same thing basically in a pen. And these are going for $7 a piece, and these are for $10 a piece. And it all goes into the same fund. What else we got, Debbie? Oh, yeah. Yeah, Tommy Tindall made 50 birdhouses for us. He took the time to put them all together and everything. And I apologize for not having one tonight. I was going to bring one up and do that. But anyway, he's donated those to us, and we're going to sell those at different festivals and whatever, and that money all goes into this fund as well. So I mean, everybody has jumped in here and helped on this thing. And yeah, I'm working on that one. Couple things that we're working on further down the road. We got, when we get through, we're going to give Othello back something special. I'm not going to really say what it is until we get done with everything and get our money and whatnot. But we've got a couple of items in mind, and we will turn that back to the city. We're not going to give you any money back. We're going to give you a project. And I think you'll be well satisfied with when we get through with it. John mentioned something here. We're going to give away 2 Centennial scholarships to the high school students. So 2 of those, we're not sure the money-wise. We're shooting for 2 $2,500 scholarships, what we're looking for. It just depends on how our funds gather here, but that's kind of our thought, and that's what we've got in mind on that. I kind of want to give you a little quick timeline of what we've got in mind. Our actual target date is May 22nd, May 23rd. The actual date is the 23rd. I had a little problem with that with some of our churches. Says, well, can't we just do it all on Saturday? I said, no, the date is May 23rd. So that's when we're going to have the actual incorporation. What we've done, we've got events that come up on Saturday, and we got events that come up on Sunday. So I think we've kind of tied that together, and I hope mellowed that a little bit. I've got a good crew that's working on my musical part of it. I've got other crews that's doing portions here, portions there. And what we're going to do, we're going to start out on a Saturday, and we're going to have our parade. We're going to have a centennial parade. And the way that's going to set up, we're going to go from, say, 1906 or 1910 on up. And as it progresses in the parade, it'll progress in time. In other words, we're going to start backwards, and then as you get to the tail end of it, it'll be the present time. And that's kind of what we've got in mind on that. Mm-hmm. And we've got quite a few things that are going to be into that parade. We've got a lot of events and whatnot to on my list we've got here. See, I got a good crew. They show me how to do all this. First thing we're going to do on that Saturday, we're going to have a community breakfast, and that'll run in the morning from, say, 8 till noon or whatever. And I think the firefighters are going to put that on. I talked to them. They're going to run that through their group, and I think they're going to do that portion of it. The parade will be the next thing at 10 o'clock. 11 o'clock, we'll have our flag raising at the Pioneer Park. Everything's based around Pioneer Park. And we'll have kind of a welcoming, just an opening ceremony, just to start things off. And then Sean's going to take over with all the music and whatnot, just kind of fill in between things. The museum's got a program going that same time, from noon till, I don't know, 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. And they've got kind of a special thing set up for what they're going to do. It's tied in with some of the women of that age. They've got some of that program put together, different speakers throughout. So we're all over here with this thing. We're going to have some kid games and whatnot at the school. We're going to have a street dance that night, whatever. That takes care of Saturday. Then Sunday we're coming back with another breakfast. We'll have a breakfast in the morning. We'll have our flag raising, and a welcome and opening ceremony. And then the churches of the community are going to get together and have an open-air service. So that's all kind of tied together to make that all happen. And then we'll start in with introductions and whatnot. Then we'll have our scholarship awards. Then we're going to have a historical program with not only the city, but the railroad and the homesteaders and all this tied in together. And then our actual reincorporation, our ceremony, we'll do that about 2 o'clock. And then I'm sure we'll have some dignitaries here to put that on for us. I'm not going to say who, but we're working on that. Then we'll have a barbecue also at the park, and I think the Rotary's going to chip in and help on that. They don't know it yet, but we're going to tell them that they're going to do it or whatever. But anyway, this is all tying together. We've got a lot of things that I want to get more of the community involved in this, which I think we already have. And I think that we've come a long ways on this thing, and I think we're there and headed in the right direction. So, anybody else got any questions?
I think you covered it. And again, I want to thank all of you for all of the time you've put in and all of the time that you're going to have to put in from now until till the celebration is over. I'm sure the community has seen the signs at all the ends, different entrances to town, and they're very pretty and well thought out and professionally done. And this group out here put them all up, and they're doing a lot of work here. So our hats are off to you. And I'd like to encourage this brick program that they have here. If you'll notice, when you leave here tonight, our entrance is cracked and needed replaced anyway. So this kind of fit like a glove. And with these brick inlays, when this facility is 200 years old, those bricks will still be there. So we encourage everybody that wants to make a contribution and that's been in town or new in town or whatever to buy a brick.
I just want to thank the committee again for all the work they've done. And we're just getting started, so we got a year to go yet.
The City of Othello Centennial 2010 Proclamation. Whereas on May 23rd, 1910, the City of Othello, Washington was incorporated and had a population of 350. The town was platted, water wells were drilled, and the post office was relocated to downtown. And whereas our history must be preserved and remembered by all, young and old. And whereas at this important time in our history, We will honor the homesteaders, farmers, railroad employees for their contribution and hard work establishing our community. And whereas the City of Othello will hold its 100th centennial celebration throughout 2010 and will host a two-day community event on May 22nd and May 23rd, 2010 for our community members, businesses, visitors, and public officials from near and far to enjoy. Now, therefore, I, Shannon McKay, Mayor of Othello, do hereby proclaim 2010 as the City of Othello's centennial, and I encourage all citizens to recognize the importance of our community's history and join in the celebration throughout. Thank you.
Thank you, Shannon.
Appreciate it.
Next item on our workshop is the city-owned property on 9th and Pine. This topic came up in 06, and it came up again here a month ago. And it's for discussion only tonight, but it's something that the council is going to have to decide on, make a decision on here in the near future. So I guess with that, I would like to open this up. This is a property that is located adjacent Lions Park. We acquired it from the federal government, and I guess Eamon, would you like to go into that?
Sure, I believe it was 2000 when the city accepted the donation from the U.S. government of this property. Previous to the city accepting it, there was discussion between the Fish and Wildlife Program and U.S. government. Some discussions had taken place, and it was discovered that the U.S. government could not donate directly to Fish and Wildlife. Could not directly donate to the Othello Housing Authority. So that being said, the United States government then contacted the City of Othello and asked if the city would accept the donation. There was some correspondence between the mayor and at that time and the United States government. I believe a United States senator was involved in some part of that, and the city was deeded and accepted the property as shown on the overhead at 9th and Pine, just south of Lions Park. The question then came up as to should the city or is the city obligated to further pass on that property in some fashion to the Othello Housing Authority. You have in your packets a letter from the city attorney. Indicates that basically the bottom line is the city has accepted the property, so it is your discretion, your total discretion as a city council, what you want to do with that property, with the exception you must meet the conditions of the deed from the U.S. government. So the city can either use it for public housing or any other public use. If the city does not do that, the property then reverts back to the United States government. The city could sell it to another organization because the city isn't in the low-income or senior housing business. The city could sell it to an organization that does that as long as they complied with the deed restrictions by the U.S. government. So the only restrictions you have are placed on the city by the deed that you have a copy of in your packets, and as our attorney says, you have full discretion on what you want to do with it. There is no obligation, but you can, if you desire as a council, take whatever action you want with the property, as long as we meet the requirements of the deed.
A couple things I'd like to point out is
as it was stated in referring to it, it's not on the tax rolls and how many properties are. I'm not sure the relevance of that, because unless it goes back to the U.S. Wildlife and they sell it to a private entity, if it's in a public entity's hands, it'll never be on the tax roll.
What Councilmember Spohr is referring to is the last time the council discussed this issue, a question remained on the table, and that was by then Councilmember Kathy Carlton, who asked how many parcels are tax exempt in the city. And as you have the information from the assessor's office, we have over 2,000 lots or parcels in the city. 215 of those are non-taxable lots. Those include churches, city property, school property, and the Othello Housing Authority property. And you have several pages of listings of those properties. So, but you're absolutely right. It is almost forced that property will never go on the tax roll. It will always remain non-taxable property.
Now, my interpretation of Mr. Whitaker's statement was that it has to be sold to the Housing Authority?
Yes, and that's why I said sell it to, not donate it. And at fair market value, the last sentence in that paragraph says fair market value.
So this we're kind of in a no-win situation with this. And as I read the minutes, I brought up in 2006 that this happened in the year 2000, and nobody's really shown an interest in it for now 10 years. And I don't know. As I went out the door, my wife said, "Oh, just deed it to me." And I said, "Well, but it's the only land around the park, and we should be able to find some other land for them. So we can't even resolve it in my household, and so hopefully we'll do a better job here."
To me, there's two council members still sitting here when we accepted this property. Millie and Eleanor were here when we accepted this. This was a project started by U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Bob Flores, and Alan Hanks. Alan Hanks was trying to get this piece of property to do some further work with the Housing Authority. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, not give it to him direct. So they, in turn, come to the city. They both made presentations here. And Bob Flores actually had to go and then took an act of Congress in order for them to deed this piece of property to the city. It was attached to a bill and deeded to the city. Bob's intention was for it to be kind of passed through to the Housing Authority on this. Mr. Hanks did come and make a request, I think, for it about a year later. And we tabled it then. We never did make a decision on it. At the time when we were looking at it, it was going to be a pass-through because Alan Hanks with the Housing Authority was doing work. He actually approached us about the property too. And to me, I think we kind of snagged it along the way. And it's always kind of left a little rough spot on me because I don't feel that's right. We're being asked out of grace to just kind of work as a third party so we can get this piece of property. And I think we kind of snagged it along the way. I've just never felt right about that. And I do think this needs to eventually go back to who it was originally intended for, and that's the Housing.
Well, it says in the 2006 minutes we tabled it, but I'm not sure in 2001, because to me that would have been the time to complete the process.
2001, we did accept we had a resolution to accept the property.
Right.
But Mr. Hanks did come back to us a while later, and it was tabled at that time too.
Did you know why?
Before 2006?
Yes.
Before 2006, it did come one time.
Why was it tabled?
Well, you have the 2000 and 2001 minutes there. It just said for further discussion. It didn't give a reason. Just tabled it.
So, Eamon, you're saying we cannot pass the property through?
No, you can. As long as it meets the condition, you have total discretion on this parcel. As long as you sell it to a person that meets the conditions of the deed to the city. And those conditions are either public housing or a public use.
But we cannot pass it through because it's considered gifting.
That's Whitaker's opinion. Yeah. That's Whitaker's opinion. It must be sold.
$1.
And that, the fair assessed value, that's at least $25,000 lot. What lots are going for in that neighborhood?
So can we, do we have to go fair market value on that? Are we committed, the law commits us to that? Or can we put whatever on it?
You have a RCW citation in Mr. Whitaker's letter that identifies if the city cannot gift, that you have to sell it.
When Alan Hanks came in 2006, he also said that he was going to put senior retirement, senior housing in there. And Councilman Carlton was asking, you know, what the demand was for senior housing, and I think that when we were discussing this before, it was for seniors. Just to note that.
But the council did ask in 06, in a formal letter to the Housing Authority, what is your intended use? And if you recall, in 06, we received a letter back from the Housing Authority indicating that the sole intended use was for senior housing.
In these April 23rd, 2001 minutes, it doesn't, at least my interpretation, doesn't say that Mr. Hanks came and asked for that property, or that the Housing Authority came and asked for that property.
I don't think they should have had to, because it was supposed to have been a pass-through to them. You want some letters here? I've got one.
No, my point is it should have happened in 2001, and since he didn't show any interest in for 5 years, it kind of, I don't feel as bad snagging it and using it as Ken does.
Well, his interest was, and in we haven't got the meeting minutes here, he did come and ask before time, after we did accept the property, he did come and ask and it was taken at the time. I don't remember the date.
So is it in the minutes somewhere?
It's not in these minutes here, but we probably have to put it somewhere. I did call up.
Well, I think we need to see that.
I think it, what we tabled it for a couple of different times is because in our area, and really we have sole discretion, is that we're landlocked for parking. And that's what we've always used it for. We just haven't thinking that the city needed that. So when we have Fiesta on the side, when you have Sunfair, we're going to start having these. That we need extra parking. I think that's why we've never moved on that type of thing. But I would ask for all the full minutes because I can't remember if that's what it was, you know. But that's why we've tabled it, is because.
Yeah, and for good reason. We are short of parking there. That is there is no more properties adjacent to the park or bordering the park. I'm wondering if there's not a win-win situation here where the city can acquire the same amount of square footage and do some trading and make this thing work for the Housing Authority and work for the city better. Because the Housing Authority, I don't think it's imperative that it be right there. For the city, it's important that we have parking right there. So I'm wondering if there's not some trading or some things that we could do to make it a win-win for everyone. And then we need to check into the fair market value versus Ken mentioned a dollar here. So the reason we're having this tonight is just for discussion and throw out some ideas, because the problem needs to be taken care of. It should have been taken care of in 2001. And it wouldn't be, you know, we wouldn't be laboring with it right now. But it hasn't been, and council is going to need to make a decision on this and make one that works, I would think, for everyone. We're not against the housing authority. The housing authority is not against the city here. We could really use that location. Maybe the housing authority could use another location.
And we basically got that for free. So if hypothetically we wanted that for parking now, it would take $20,000-$25,000 to get that. So if we spend that much getting a lot for housing authority, then I think that's a fair trade.
But I think there's I do think that there's been good points brought up by council here tonight, and I think we can come out of this with a win-win situation with the housing authority, with our reputation, and still end up with some parking adjacent to Lions Park.
We'll meet with Mr. Hanks and report back to council.
Can I make a couple of comments here?
Yep.
I think that might be a good route to go. I mean, I think this is a good possibility. But like I say, if you go back into some documentation, I've got one here from the Senator Slate Gordon, and they talk about is the housing authority and make the transfer to the housing authority through the city of Othello. I've got one here that's all they talk about is U.S. Fish and Wildlife talking about housing authority. Actually, they approached them, and then the housing authority went back to them to make this deal, and they could not give it to them directly. It had to be a pass-through through the city to make it happen. So I think it's only fair that we, at no dollar value, $1 maybe or whatever, to transfer a deed, because they did all the legwork and the city did absolutely nothing, and they ended up with the problem.
We're not arguing that. Yeah, I don't think anyone here is arguing that, Kit.
But what I'm saying is, if we can do it that way, I think that they would be happy and we would too. But as far as I'm concerned, they own that piece of property.
Well, we own it, yeah, but...
Because the deed says so, but that's not right.
Well, that's what the deed says. So what we need to do is, Eamon, you're right. Let's start negotiation with Alan, okay, and let's make this thing work for both of us, for everyone involved.
Did it say anything about timelines in there or anything, Ken?
Oh, I'd have to dig into it a little deeper. I just got to you this afternoon because I didn't even think this was supposed to come up tonight. I specifically said let's do it in January, and here it comes up in December here.
But you know what, Ken? I got to keep reminding you. You are one council member that helps make up the city council. There's six others.
That's right.
You do not dictate what is on our agenda or when it comes up. Now, there's a consensus of the council. We will put it on the agenda whenever they want. And I thought it would be a good time to bring this up, and so that we can get down the road and make a decision here that benefits everybody. So council and Gina, you will... down after the first of the year, you'll probably have this in your discussion up here, and so that's another reason I wanted it. You knew you were going to be here tonight, and so that you're brought up to speed on this. Item number six, sewer rate discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. What you have before you is a continuation of the study of the sewer rate increase. I included in the packet the November 2 workshop material, and then in this cover page, we listed out some projects that Jay is going to discuss, and there's some dollar amounts associated with some of them. The rate increase itself on the front page of the agenda. I give you the percentages. Yeah, it's a $2 increase each year in the rate. And what that works over the current rate in 2010, it's a 10.163% increase over the current from the current rate. And then it gives the amount of the new revenue of $73,174. The second year, it's a 9.23 rate increase because the rate had been raised the previous year, so now the $2 is a smaller percentage, and it goes on out to the third year the same way. The total new revenue over that three-year period for that rate increase is about almost $220,000. I did some projected revenues and some projected operating expenditures. I did not include any capital in there. And then at the very bottom, you can see the potential reserves over that period of time. Currently, in the 2010 budget for the sewer system, we're looking at the end of 2010, we'll transfer almost $500,000 into the reserve fund, which will give us about $2,021,000 in the reserve fund. And then in 2011 and 2012, with this rate increase, we would probably transfer a little over $1.2 million additional dollars into the reserve fund. So at the end of 2012, we could expect to have around $3.25 million in reserves. So that's a picture. That's a picture of the dollar portions. If you have any questions, Jay is going to talk about the projects that are available. Can I answer any questions on the financial part?
I have one. Yes. Based on my interpretation of this chart of the revenue versus expenditures, if we didn't do the increase, we would still have approximately building reserves up to the $1.77 million minus the $219,000.
That's correct.
So we'd be over, we'd be building without the $2 increase, we'd be reserves would just be a little over $1.5 million.
Yeah, about half.
I guess, Mike, I got a question for you when I was looking at this. On the sewer rates, single family inside jurisdiction, 2008 AWC tax and user fee, steady, modified. So this chart we have right here, is this an exact copy off of something? Or has this been adjusted to, I'm not sure what.
The AWC?
Yeah.
We took the information from AWC. This is our spreadsheet. And some of the rates that were in there were older rates, and so we had Marcy call the cities and get their current rates. So we put the current rates in here. The AWC survey, they don't continually update, and I don't think they get information back from cities a lot, so they'll leave old rates in there. And we wanted current information in here, and so Marcy called, I think she called them all. There may be a couple that she didn't get a hold of, but this is pretty much an updated list.
So then you readjusted where the cities fell on the chart.
Yes, that's okay. Correct. That's correct.
Well, we'll have to do that all over again in January, though. We updated it 2 months ago, I think it was.
Yeah, because cities are doing as we're doing
updated
here tonight.
Getting yeah. New year, yeah.
I have no problem with the increase at all. The only thing I see here on the staff recommendation is putting it on the consent agenda for the December 14th.
Oh. You know, that actually, I have to apologize for that because that was brought up the very first time we addressed this on November 2nd, and I overlooked that when I put this together. I basically took the old agenda and kind of modified it, and I didn't change that. So I apologize for that.
Yeah, I feel the increases needs to be shown by each individual yeah. council members on yeah. separate issue.
Yeah. Well, Mike only gets half the blame. I get the other half because I read over it too. But we do have to have a meeting, an open meeting, and vote because Water District Number 1 has to be here.
Jay, I think, are you next up to
yeah,
go through the capital expenses, why we're doing this, what it's going to cost us?
Correct. What we've done is included this in your packets, and it's a list of possible capital projects that this money could be used for. The first one there, the lagoon lining, it's at any point in time, we could be required to line this pond, and what I did is looked at two different cities in Washington, or one, which was Warden, and I got the per square foot costs and applied them to Othello's lagoons, and this is what I come up with for $3,092,760. I broke out just some of the partial ponds that you can see there. If we just had to do the polishing pond, it would be $535,000. If we just had to do the primary ponds, it's $2.17 million, almost $2.18 million. That's just one possible capital project. Another one is a bench road sewer extension. We're working on the SR24 industrial area, and the sewer extension to this area and to service this area, we're looking at an engineer's current estimate right now of $3,275,000. That is another possible project that this money could be used for. An infiltration and inflow study. Quincy just conducted one, and it was at a cost of $60,000. When we go back to when we did the sewer videos for Othello, ecology has some concerns that we do have a significant amount of inflow in our sewer system. A lot of the area could not be videotaped due to the high flows within the sewer system, and so our infiltration and inflow study becomes a little more expensive than Quincy's. And our engineers are looking at possibly $100,000 if ecology decided to have us do this study. It's another possible scenario. New mechanical sewer treatment facility. Previously, we were thinking it was going to be $12 to $15 million, but we looked at two different cities to determine what our costs would be for a new mechanical plant. The city of Raymond just installed a new complete system at $25 million. That system's just considered to be a little bit bigger than Othello's, so we figured it'd be just a little bit less. The city of Toppenish recently completed an upgrade. They had some existing infrastructure in place for a mechanical treatment plant, and their upgrade was $13 million. Our engineer's estimate at this day and time, if we had to do a plant, is right around $20 million for the city of Othello for a new treatment facility.
Jay, did these cities get any cost share from the Department of Ecology? Did they get any money to cost share money to do this?
I didn't look at each individual one. Mm-hmm. I could bring that back.
But they will. Typically, when DOE mandates something, they'll help fund it. And certainly not 100%, maybe around 20%. But they will help fund it if we meet certain criteria.
And that's what we're trying to do here,
is to
make sure that we're
matching funds.
Showing that we're making an attempt, because we know that we have these capital expenditures coming up on the horizon.
Right. And to be eligible for some of this funding, we have to be able to prove also that we can maintain such a facility and that our sewer rates will allow us to do that. If we have a sewer rate that doesn't allow us to maintain a facility, our chances for funding are even less.
Operational costs.
Yeah, our operational costs.
Sustainability.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Jay, do the mechanical plants that's mentioned in this report get rid of all the ponds? Do you have no ponds with a mechanical plant?
We have a resident expert in the audience. Gina is a level 4. There's only about 9 level 4 certifications in the state. Gina is one of them. Did I say that wrong?
No.
Okay.
Yes, correct. It depends. There are plants around the state, I believe, that have, I think Everett is one of them, is a big plant, that has some lagoon systems tied in with their mechanical plants. It would just depend. combination of the two, but I would think that it would just be dependent on what deal we wanted for our area or for us, or what they thought would work.
And that would be a design issue that would have to be looked at by the engineers. Could we have a combination of a mechanical plant and ponds, or do we have to go complete mechanical? How would it work for Othello? And that's a design issue that we haven't looked at this time yet.
DOE is going to dictate that.
Can I address another question to Gina?
Yeah.
I know you worked down there for a while. These ponds currently are lined with diatomaceous earth, and they've sat there for since 86, I believe. I think it's like concrete down there. Is that your intuitive feeling, or do you think there's some leakage going through there?
No. When I first came, it changed slightly. The longer I was here, it changed slightly. But when I first came to Othello, we were having problems at the time that we had actually low flow in the winter time. Or no, high flows in the winter. Was it?
It was high in the winter.
Yeah, we had the high flows in the winter and low flows in the summer. It was a little bit strange, because what we were having happen is we wouldn't actually have any outflow going over the baffles in the summertime, and we couldn't figure out. No, we had higher flows in the summer. It was the opposite. We had higher flows in the summer. I'm sorry, it's been a long time. We had higher flows in the summer than we did in the winter, and in the winter we actually would not have any outflow going into the receiving stream, because we believed what was happening. And this is the only thing we could come up with. We didn't have an engineer or anything look at it, but the closest I could come up with is that we're sitting on cracked basalt down there, and what was happening was in the summertime, the groundwater actually comes up, and it was forming a hydraulic seal around the bottom of the plant, and water was actually moving through the plant then and going out, whereas in this wintertime, that groundwater, once the irrigation stopped, the groundwater would go down, and there was not as much water moving through because it was going out the bottom of the plant.
It's not the answer I wanted.
it was really frustrating for me to do. But I believe that the diatomaceous earth was an attempt to keep it from doing that, but I don't believe it really worked for a while.
Well, it should be filtering it, at least.
Yeah.
It depends on how far that water is moving through the ground. It should be filtering.
Any more questions for Jay or Mike?
I have a question. I thought we had to, per Department of Ecology, line the lagoon at a certain point. Is that not correct? Like 2012?
You're absolutely correct.
Right?
We talked about that at the council level, because DOE was talking to us about that. And it was all contingent upon they're issuing our new NPDES permit for the lagoons. We have the temporary now, and it doesn't say anything about that. It doesn't say we have to go to mechanical. So yes, we were saving for that.
Right?
Yes, it doesn't mean that in the near future they won't change their mind or make us do that. So what we're saying, what Jay is identifying, is we need to be prepared for that and these other things that we may get hit with. And looking at our sewer rates compared to everybody else, we're pretty low. But it's your decision whether or not you want to plan for the future or not, based on what the projects are that Jay's identifying.
So, like Eleanor said, we've been saving for that, and it shows in the reserves that we are working toward that, whatever the Department of Ecology comes up with that we need to do,
right.
We will be prepared to do that.
Correct. Mike has the last little report that will show where we will be if we look at this $2 for the next 3 years. Did you go over that, or are you going to round out with that?
I went through that when we started.
Okay. I thought you were going to follow up. Okay.
Yeah.
So that will be on our agenda on the 14th. It'll be on the not on the consent agenda, it'll be on the agenda. Item number seven, committee reports. Council, you got something, Ken, you'd like to share about the centennial?
I have got something on Cooley Corridor, if that works.
Go ahead, yeah.
I have trouble with my CCCs or my CCO fellow or whatever here, but I'm not really going to give you an update of the Cooley Corridor, but what I, what we've got a problem with is back to the same people we were talking to here a little earlier is WSDOT. I am having a meeting tomorrow with WSDOT and Shoreline, kind of for the Cooley Corridor, but it's actually for the state byways. We've got a somewhat of a little misinterpretation of what WSDOT thinks that the scenic byways are in the state and what our interpretation is. And what they've done, they've taken that piece of pie and the scenic byways are about like this compared to the whole pie. And they have got rid of our byway coordinator for the state, and it wasn't on account of budget reasons. They decided they didn't need it. So they got another gal that has got, wears several hats and WSDOT. So they've put her in command of this, and all they're doing is they don't know which way they're going. What they have done, they have changed this thing, what they call scenic and recreation byways. Well, we look at it as a scenic byway, so I mean there's a discrepancy in what they're doing here. So we have started a correlation between all the state byways. Actually, we're going to form an organization. Guess who's getting involved in that? But anyway, we have put together kind of a package of our own, what we think WSDOT should do for all of us. So we will probably be out asking for support when we get this thing all put together. I'm not saying money-wise, but just to help as far as scenic byways. It goes further than that because when you get into a state byway, that's how you end up with a recognition from a national byway. You have to have that state recognition first. And we've already done that. We've jumped all those hoops as far as Cooley Corridor is concerned. So I just wanted to give you an update. It's a kind of a deep subject, and I'll enlighten you a little more when I get back tomorrow. So.
Okay.
Friday they had the Washington State Auditors Exit Conference for auditing the books here at the church, or church. There we go.
It's been a long day.
Anyway, I guess. Basically, they said the same thing as every year we had before, is excellent. So I guess it's our 11th year. We asked the question of going a 1 or a 2 year audit, because they brought that up again. Would we save a bunch of money by doing that? It did not sound like, because basically they'd stay here longer, they'd have more hotel nights. We'd save a little bit on the trip fee, you know, driving here or whatever, because they wouldn't be coming every year. But as a whole, it did not sound like there was much of a savings for the city to do a 2-year audit every 2 years because of qualifying. Plus, Mike mentioned he'd be way more comfortable having to try to recall 1 year instead of trying to remember 2 years back if something came up or any of the employees of the city. So you know on that, because we asked him that question when he was here. Basically, he didn't have much to tell us, much to say, other than a good job for everybody. So that was nice to hear. So,
yeah, this is 11 years running, and so I'd like to congratulate everyone for doing a good job, and you know, in order to do that, they need council support. I'd like to thank the council and everybody that does this to get these good recommendations and certificates.
We have a
not every city can say that. In fact, there's probably not very many that can.
We have a very conscientious staff. I've said it. We work really, really hard at doing things the right way, keeping good records. And I just applaud them.
he brought that up, that he needed something, the staff jumped on it, he got things quickly, so he's able to get what he needed to leave and go do the rest of the work. And he also mentioned he had a heated room, and it was nice with a view. And he mentioned some cities he works out of the closet. Seriously. So, and some rooms with no heat, you know, so we treat them right, and, which
and,
is good. So.
You know, I think the software that we do have that the council has given Mike when he's come and ask, you know, helps generate that information and get it up quick for him. Go ahead.
Adams County Government Council will be having their meeting here this Thursday at 6 p.m. I'm going to invite anybody to come. We'll be providing dinner, too, also for those attending. It seems to help me get a better attendance from all the board members, too. The time is. We've been doing very well. We're aggressively pursuing our micro loans or small loans for developing business or current businesses. Public hearing, I guess, planned that we're working on, because the monies will be carried through Adams County for that. And we're also planning for our annual stakeholders meeting to be held in January.
Mm-hmm. That's always a good meeting. You get our representatives there, Schessler and you know, our 9th district people. So good meeting to go to. Any more committee meetings or information to share with us?
The pool's going well, but attendance was down today.
Was it down this week?
Yeah.
Heating costs are up.
Don't want to make a skating rink out of
it. Item number 8, unfinished business. And 9, new business. Shop with the Cop is this Saturday, December 12th at City Hall. All volunteers are welcome at 1:30. Debbie, is that when you decorate the tree?
No, we're decorating the tree Friday between about 12:40 for about an hour. We have about 110 third graders going to be here. It's going to be fun. Come on.
Yeah. Mayor's Luncheon is Wednesday, December 9th at the Othello Senior Center. I'd like to invite anybody that cares to be there to be there. Othello Chamber Festival of Lights is Saturday, December 12th at 5:30. The parade will be on Main Street. And our the meeting on the 14th, we will have refreshments after the meeting to acknowledge outgoing council and mayors. bring a spouse and family and encourage them to come.
And incoming.
And the incoming. Bring your spouses and your family and there's punch and cookies, and it's kind of a fun thing. So if there's nothing else, we'll adjourn the workshop.
What's that? So you got the January 5th.
Oh, you got
to
have it done by then?
Yeah. You just carry on.
I think you take over at the end of the minute. Somehow. I don't know. We'll ask him. I think he. I don't know.
Okay. I'll pass the word to Billy Grimes.
Okay.
I took care of that today. I sent an email and told her to ambush everybody.
Hey, Ken, do you remember Brown's Cutting Girl? It used to be up here.
I know. That's why I emailed her back.
I've got a keychain from Brown's Cutting Girl. You know, back when I used to have the Hubbard 8.
Okay. There's a chance I won't be here. My wife's in Washington, D.C.
you might want that for the museum or something, you know, I'll just donate it. But it's, you know, it's something that was back in the early 60s, late 50s.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, I was trying to say, yeah.
Yeah, it was in these, remember they had those apartments up here?
Right.
Your boss, Terry, that, I don't, and I told you, I don't wanna play any games, I'm gonna play east side, west side. Everybody wants something to do.
Hell, it'll be there forever and ever. That's the thing, it'll be there for.
I was just talking to. I don't wanna do it.
John, Sean, yeah.
I asked her, I asked her, I said, what are you doing here? Did you mix up your knife? Because I was trying to get it out of her. And she said, oh, she already told me today, she told me to be here tonight.
I haven't got one with me, but, see, I think Debbie got it.
Yeah, for what? She's gonna build it?
She may, yeah. I'll get you.